Hi, my name's Louise Hickman. I'm an Associate Professor at the Faculty of Health at UTS.
My name's Caleb Ferguson, and I'm a Postdoc Research Fellow at the Graduate School of Health.
So when we're talking about evidence-based practice, what's the gap between what we know is evidence and what actually happens in hospitals?
So I guess in terms of nursing and the care that patients receive in hospital, it should be based on the best available evidence. And so evidence-based practice really comprises of a few different elements. One of it is the best available research evidence that's out there, the clinician's own expertise, and then also the individual patient's own circumstances. So when we're providing care to patients, we need to consider all three of these things to make healthcare decisions and to provide care to patients that's based around these three elements as well.
And does that happen regularly? Are nurses in hospitals saying, I've just read a paper on this, this is how we need to do it?
I guess there's a lot of gaps and there's a lot of lag. I think there's quite a lot of papers that are published in academic research that's published every day, that generates new evidence and new ways of caring for patients. And I guess there's a lot of logistical challenges in terms of getting clinicians to then change behaviour in terms of adopting those evidence-based approaches. So there's a few sort of challenges there in terms of keeping on top of the evidence, so being aware of new studies that are out there, and also being equipped with the skills that are required to provide, to interpret that research and then provide that care to the patient.
And there are organisations that support translating evidence into practice, so they might pull a group of papers together that are all on one topic, and they help translate that evidence for health professionals, whether it be nurses, doctors, allied health staff, to translate it into practice. But it's not the same as, say, pharma companies that have reps out there who are really pushing key messages from their latest trials. So, I mean, it's really important that the different health professionals really focus on what evidence is out there, where to best get it, and then translate it to practice. But to do that, they need to understand it, and they need to understand what they read.
So how do we go about explaining to students what is the best academic research to use?
Most health degrees in Australia have always had subjects within their curriculum that focus on evidence-based practice and research and what they entail and what you need to know. But what we've lacked is real engagement in those subjects and a love of learning those subjects and a love of wanting to know that information, because they've been notoriously dry and unengaging, and quite methodological in their approach.
You've both taught these subjects. What is it like for a student? What do you see in the students?
I guess traditionally, as Louise has already said, that traditionally students find these subjects quite boring and dry would be the two words that students use in student feedback a lot of the time. And as educators, we try and make these subjects really exciting for students to really get them to engage with the content and to achieve the objectives of the subject. So in the past, we've tried to select really cool and funny papers, particularly. A lot of the BMJ do a Christmas edition. So some of the weird and wonderful methods are around about different topics.
And we've really tried to anchor them into scenarios that they can relate to. So they're a second year undergraduate student. How you would engage them with research papers is very different to, say, someone who's worked in industry for 20 years and has come back at a postgrad level and's wanting a more advanced approach to research. I think, you know, you have to anchor it in stuff that they can really hang on to and understand to get their interest.
And when we're talking about evidence in nursing, what evidence is there in engaging students in their learning?
Well, I'll let Louise answer this.
Well, that's sort of how these papers that we've published have come about. So we've had a couple grants now at both undergraduate and postgraduate level. How it came about is we did a systematic review to look at what are the best teaching and learning strategies to engage students in evidence-based practice and research and health, like, or just conceptually those kind of subjects. And there is no high-level evidence out there.
So there's nothing to guide you in how
There's some really nice qualitative studies, but when you actually look at it across larger numbers and you want a higher quality study that really robustly says these things actually help, it hasn't yet been done. So we've sort of had to go back to the drawing board and really start unpacking and exploring what we do, why we do it, how we do it, and really doing some really good groundwork with students. And this is how Caleb's come up with his journal club. So some of the stuff we're doing is being done for years, like the journal club, but it's just the lens and how we do it and what students receive change. So I'll let Caleb explain.
Well, yeah, let's go back a step. What is the journal club? What is journal club?
Yeah, so journal clubs have been around for quite a long time. So usually it follows a standardised format whereby the participants of the journal club receive a paper. So someone would choose a relevant paper to the group's experience and practice, and maybe something that's a bit novel or the latest sort of evidence. And you'd come together and usually followed quite a structured format. Some journal clubs aren't too structured in how they work. A lot of them can be quite informal, really just looking at some of the key hallmarks of the paper, some of the limitations, and really getting a good critical appraisal of the research design and interpretation of some of the findings.
So how do you move the journal club into a university setting?
So even in university setting, and particularly in some of the subjects that me and Louise have taught in the past, we've undertaken sort of journal club style activities within the classroom setting physically, and asked students to read a certain journal article and come prepared to class to be ready to debate this article and talk about some of the finer details of it and really get into the meaty sort of critical appraisal of it. Students sometimes do engage with that sort of activity. However, I guess a lot of them find it quite boring and dry, I guess, reading a research paper and coming to class to really just discuss it. And we do use a lot of structure around this activity. There's a lot of really good tools around to help students be able to critically appraise research, and we do use them in class. But I guess also we've picked lots of cool papers and fun papers to use in the past, but still students find this sort of quite a dry and boring way of doing it.
Caleb, you've taken this journal club one step further. What have you done?
I've had a huge interest in the last sort of few years around using social media in health, and wanted to sort of apply some of this to nurse education in particular. So really, I think that the idea for this also came from on Twitter. We have things called moderated tweet chats, which aren't quite a new thing, but there's a really strong group called We Nurses, and that was set up by someone in the UK called Teresa Chin. And she founded that because she was an agency nurse and found it hard to, you know, link in with other healthcare professionals to discuss some of the issues in healthcare. And so those chats are based around a certain topic, use a hashtag, and people can engage on them on Twitter quite easily. So we took that sort of idea and that model, and then thought about how we can apply that in the classroom. So we came up with the idea of a Twitter journal club, whereby students would engage through a Twitter account and engage with the critical appraisal of a research article online. So we trialled this in the class, first of all, in the classroom for a 75-minute sort of like structured activity. And then since then, we've tried it out of class with sort of mixed participation.
What it looks like, I've seen the Storify of it, and everyone introduces themselves. It's good to get to know people. And then, Caleb, you were asking questions of the students about the paper, and they were responding.
Yeah, so we have this, we use what we call a CASP tool, which is a structured critical appraisal tool. And there's 12 questions in that, and usually that's what we would use physically in a journal club style format. So we can ask a question, me as a moderator or as a lecturer, every sort of 5 minutes. But I think it's really important for the lecturer or the moderator to really engage with the students around some of the questions, and that students also engage with each other, because a lot of the analysis that we've done really shows that a lot of the conversation was student to teacher and not so much student to student interactions. So that's something we've got to work on.
Our biggest gap is actually getting evidence to the bedside so we can improve patient outcomes. With a postgraduate population, when we use something like a social media facilitated journal club, it's one thing to have it in the university setting. It's another thing if we can actually give them the skills so they can then take this back to industry and do it with their colleagues. So like Caleb said before with We Nurses, if we can get these students to actually engage in another community and another learning environment, that is a support network for them.
You said this was a very dry topic area. Was the use of Twitter or social media, did that help the engagement levels?
I've never, ever seen anything like this in my whole entire time of teaching, ever, in a classroom. We have a really cool picture that we took a photo of students in the classroom, and they're all sat. So I think there's about 60 students in the first class. And we had some additional tech support and academic support for the first session. But the classroom was deadly silently quiet. They were all focused on the task with their device and really engaged with the topic and the questions. And I don't know if this was really related to the novelty aspect of it, but it was really just this really awesome experience.
I think, you know, the principles of participation, like they own it, they're in charge, they can participate at all different levels where they feel comfortable. And it's probably, I mean, it was done in a very safe, inclusive forum.
When you think of what an engaged classroom looks like, dead silence is not that image. You have maybe a robust debate in mind?
Yeah, I think this is a really engagement on a different level. Like, traditionally, you'd think of this, you know, very active classroom, very noisy environment, and people engaging in robust debate. But people still did engage in debate, but silently and through this platform, which is really cool. And I guess it's how you think of engagement and how you think of social media engagement and active participation too. Yeah.
It's one thing to be across all this information, but how do you then go into your healthcare team and say you're a junior in that team? How do you then speak up to those senior members who may be saying something different to the research?
Mm. That's, communication can be really difficult, and if you look at a lot of issues that even when things go wrong, often when you drill down, it's not something that's easily quantifiable. It comes down to either larger system problems or communication issues. So really upskilling people on how to have difficult conversations in a non-confrontational way, just so it really depends on the team. There's so many variables, but empowering people to, as a professional, whether you're a junior nurse or a junior doctor, or you're just another consultant working with another consultant, you've got completely different views or agendas. Like, how do you best come together? And for me, I know I always come from the perspective of the patient. So what is in the patient's best interest? And all of us are there to advocate for patients regardless of discipline. So you've got to say, you know, ask questions. Sometimes they're the easiest way to do. You can ask a question without pointing fingers, you know. Can you tell me about this? I've read about it. Do you know about it? And they might say, yes, we are quite aware of that, but at the moment we're doing this because of why, and this patient's needs require this. So it is complex, and that's why the ability to communicate clearly is really important and to ask questions.